This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Well, let's talk about bloodlines in this culture corner. It's kind of medical research combined with cultural practice is what I'm going to say. And in both these fields, I'm certainly not an expert. Perhaps you are, either on the cultural side or on the medical side. But let's just get some clarity. And the reason is this. The South African National Blood Service is constantly requesting for more and more donations. And at times their blood stocks are critically, critically low. Because statistically, it's said that only 1% of South Africans are active blood donors. Just 1% in a country of 60 million people. And yet that 1% account for 80,000 units of blood used each day in blood transfusions. There is a blood transfusion almost every minute that takes place in South Africa, relying very, very, very much on the generosity and the goodwill of blood donors who make up less than 1% of South African society. And now the question is why? Why are people not donating blood? And there's a historical context. There was a time where, because of apartheid and what had happened in South Africa, there was a very racist approach to blood donations where it was viewed that black people's blood was not desired. That's one allegation. And there were many, many instances where the South African Blood Service had to clarify its position and had to be transparent about its profiling of donors. So that's the first thing. But then the secondary issue is when you take the politics out, it's said that Africans are highly superstitious people. And there's a sense that when you pass your blood to another person, you lose something of yourself and you also make yourself vulnerable to witchcraft. That's just a simplified understanding that I have from the research. And so with those kinds of variables at play, can we change the narrative around blood donations, around stem cell donations, around transfusions, transplants, and organ donations? One, because they help so much in medical research, and two, because increasingly with diseases like cancer and leukemia, which are now afflicting everyone irrespective of race and age, there is really a genuine need for healthy organs and healthy blood to help our compatriots live longer. So that's enough from me. Let's hear what the experts say. We're joined by Makhosi Nomabuto, who's a traditional healer and consultant at DKMS Africa. And we're also joined by Kensani Mahlangu, who's the communications officer at the South African National Blood Services. Makhosi Nomabuto, good morning.
Good morning, Lerato. How are you?
Fine, thank you, ma'am. And thank you for your time. And Kensani Mahlangu, good morning.
Good morning, lady.
So, Kensani, off the bat, I'm going to say I'm very biased. I've been a blood donor for nearly 10 years simply because I have a rare blood type. And once I donated, you guys wouldn't leave me alone. You are very good at harassing people to come and donate. And so I do it. But whenever I'm there, I'm usually the only black person there. And it's intriguing. Why is that?
I mean, I love that you say we harass people, because really our donor base is always struggling, you know. As you did mention, our blood stocks, the days do ebb and flow between 5 days where we're very comfortable, and as it stands today, we're only on 3.6 days. But to your question about you being the only black person there, I think it's actually gotten better. When we compare it to our stats in about 2005, we're only at about 19% of our African donors that account for our total donor base. And as it stands in 2020-2021, we were at 46%. So we've grown quite significantly. But yes, the religious and the ancestral factors really do come into play when it comes to donors, not just committing to regular donation, but actually getting started.
Yeah. Okay, so you've got to tell me what you've done to get a little bit more public information, but secondly, to change perceptions, because there was a time, and it was very negative PR for the South African National Blood Service, where there was a feeling that there was racial profiling around blood donations.
That's correct. I think conversations have really helped us. I mean, platforms like yours really do help us to get out there and speak to the people. And just continuing to speak and also having people like Makhosi Nomabutho speaking on these particular issues helps really raise awareness, open people's minds, and get people out there donating. I think we're still struggling, and that racial profiling still does come back. But you know what? I think the majority of those who do donate see that we have corrected the path. And speaking to that as well, it's I think people do get deterred when they hear that your whole blood will only really be used after your third donation. Mm-hmm. Every time before that, we will then only be able to use components of, which would be the platelets or the plasma, but never the red blood cells, you know. So we're improving. We're talking as we go along, and it's making a difference.
Just before I bring in Makhosi, I want to know what you mean by what you're saying. We're only using certain components, not the red blood cells, the plasma. So how is the blood, what do we say? How is it divided, used, segregated? I'm not sure what the terminology is for people to feel comfortable.
Yes, so the makeup of your blood is in three components. You have the red blood cells, you have the plasma, and you have the platelets. So these all really do different functions. The platelets help in clotting, so we would use that for people with maybe blood illnesses, chronic illnesses, or burn victims. Then there's the plasma, which can be used to treat the cancer patients. And the whole blood is for people who then hemorrhage, or rather lose large quantities of blood in casualties and trauma situations, maybe even surgery. So that's what the different components of your one unit of blood can do. That's why we're always saying your one unit can literally save up to three lives. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and who are the recipients? Obviously, people in hospital, trauma units, but I'm told a lot of the blood, particularly the platelets, is helping cancer patients.
Precisely, yes. So I think one of the misconceptions while we're on that topic is that the majority of our blood is for trauma, which is actually not true. The maternity wards and pediatrics use up the majority of the blood that everyone donates. So you are saving babies, and you are helping moms to actually have opportunities to live with their babies. But as I also said, burn victims, we manufacture medical products as well. They are eye serums that you can make from your own blood. Casualties, emergencies, cancer patients, yes. So those are our recipients.
Okay, so when you say maternity wards are using up a lot of blood, so I don't know what are the circumstances through which a woman would need some kind of a transfusion, but at that point in time, as she's trying to save her life and that of the baby, she's not asking cultural questions. She's not saying, whose blood is that? She's just saying, I want to live with my baby.
That's correct. So when you're in the maternity ward, say, for instance, you're going in for an emergency C-section, or even if you're given natural birth, some women do sort of have, not sort of, they do, they would then hemorrhage over and above everyone else, you know, so they would need emergency transfusions. And in that situation, that blood literally is the difference between her having a life and losing her life. So you see how important that blood donation really is.
So Makhosi Nomabutho, let's hand this conversation over to you, starting with this example of what happens in maternity wards. That is a point at which life is being brought into the world, and there is the risk of a life leaving the world. And at that moment of life confronting death, nobody's asking, where does the blood come from? But when we are talking blood donation, everybody's commenting about where the blood comes from.
Firstly, thank you, Kanzani, so much for such an informative explanation of what happens with the blood when it's donated. You know, Lerato, the example that you're giving is one that I recently dealt with in my own practice, where the child needed 2 transfusions a day, and that is such a difficult position for the parents to be in, because you know the amount of superstition that there is around pregnancy and birth, just in general, in our cultures, in our African cultures, to the extent where people are discouraged from sharing the news of a pregnancy and so on.
Mm.
So it's really painful that the reality is that most people only consider the validity of donating blood or stem cells in the event that they are directly affected.
Mm.
We wait before taking action. We wait for the danger to enter our home before we take action. And as Kanzani have already said, it is platforms like this, it is platforms like social media and traditional media in general that can really do the work of demystifying and untangling the narratives that people have around donation in general.
I like the word demystify. What are the myths? What is the mystique around blood in African culture that would make people so hesitant to donate blood, but at the point of life and death, they're quite comfortable to receive that blood?
Mm. As you said in the discoveries you've made through your own research, it really does come from that place of fearing that when one donates their blood or one donates their stem cells or one donates their organs at the time of death or organs that can be donated while living, that somehow the donor is less whole. It's a really unfortunate misconception, and it does permeate the conversation in general. And the idea that it leaves you vulnerable or the distrust of traditional Western medicine in general with regards to what does happen with what we donate, you know, that is really, I think, where the hesitation comes from. Yeah. And I agree again with Kanzani when she says that it is a matter of having these conversations and continuing to ask questions.
I want to stay with you, Makosi Nomabuto, and this is just your understanding of African traditions around life, around blood, and this practice of blood donations, right? Which, for all intents and purposes, let's just call it a function of Western medicine. I don't know, historically, in ancient societies, whether there were types of transfusions that were happening within families or pacts signed using blood. If you could tell us a little bit about that, what's your view?
Blood is sacred.
Okay.
And I believe that blood is sacred even in Western medicine. In our traditional medicine practice, there have been many advanced medical practices. For instance, if you look at the history of birth and giving birth via cesarean section, that was an African practice before it was something adopted by Western medicine.
Hmm.
Now, the function of colonization and white supremacy in the ways in which it oppressed our understanding of indigenous healing systems is that it gave to us an ideology that our medical practices, traditions in general, have been static, that they have not been subject to change over time and have not been affected by advancements made by practitioners over time. So this perspective is what gives hesitancy to the idea that science is part and parcel of indigenous medicine practices.
And in indigenous medicine, in the ancient days, if you are my sister or my mother and I'm sick and a healer says she needs a shot of blood, would there be hesitation of my mother, sister, or somebody in my bloodline sharing their blood with me?
Now, I'm going to be very careful in answering that question because I have not encountered any documentation. regarding this particular scenario. But it would stand to reason that if this was the case and there were, you know, implements like actual instruments that could make this transfusion possible, and that the medical practitioner was capable of doing this, that it would be done. There is no reason for us to believe that it would not be done.
Yeah.
I'm recalling something that I've read regarding, I believe it was a missionary somewhere in the Great Lakes region who spoke about a blood transfusion that was performed to save his life in his memoirs. So there does seem to be reference to blood transfusion, but it's just at this moment, I don't actually have the reference.
And I so respect how careful you're being, because you don't want to misrepresent or exaggerate or disrespect. Talking about memoirs, I've read something very briefly about the Democratic Republic of Congo, and it's in the Africa Report, where during COVID, across Africa, the CDC was trying to convince people to donate more blood because there was evidence during COVID that people with healthier blood cells could help people who contracted COVID to recover faster. And it was found across the breadth of Africa that there was a hesitance in donating blood because in some countries it's linked to witchcraft. In Nigeria in particular, that was a thing.
Definitely, absolutely. I mean, we know in, I don't know how much you know, but it's just pervasive knowledge that even things like your own items of clothing can be used in negative ways when we speak in the context of witchcraft. So definitely people do have hesitation when thinking about donating blood and the properties of one's body. But the thing that we need for the public to understand and other African medical practitioners to understand is how it is that these properties are handled once they're donated. And the reality being that in the context that we live in, what we donate is almost always guaranteed to be used towards saving a life because there are so few donors on the database. The likelihood of what you donate just sitting on a shelf and never being utilized to save a life is, I don't know what the percentages are, but I'd imagine almost close to zero.
We're in conversation with Mark Khosi, Norma Butu, and Kensani Mahlangu. Just African perceptions around blood donation and organ donation too.
Power Talk, the Culture Corner.
Culture around bloodlines, lineage, identity in the blood, and the life that breathes in you, that lives in you through your blood. Can it be passed on to someone else? Lorato in Kempton Park, you'd like to say something.
Good afternoon. Good morning to your guests, Kenzani and Makosi. Thank you so much for hosting this conversation, Lerato. I lost a brother now on the 21st of March to leukemia. And I knew very little, in fact, next to nothing about leukemia. And it was after, you know, doing a little bit of research, understanding what stem cell donation is about. I'm a blood donor. But I was startled to find out, Lerato, that two facts that stood out for me. The first one is that every 72 minutes, it is reported that a South African is diagnosed with a blood cancer, right? Juxtapose that with only 0.04% of South Africans are registered on the are registered as stem cell donors. So if we're just to, you know, almost contextualize that, that if, you know, taking the 60 million of us in South Africa, only 24,000 of us are on the registry, right? And you see how, you know, the challenge is. But I'm glad that you're bringing the context around what are some of the things that are almost standing in the way of people registering, availing themselves for that. And what we have done, you know, in memory of Luzuko Koti, our friend and brother who passed away, is that we've decided to launch a campaign in his name. And the most important part of this campaign is more around the conversations, because we recognize that while there may be a register to be on the stem cell donation register, there's information gap, there's a knowledge gap. Unless we have this conversation, but also listen to people. And I think, you know, that's what I'm encouraged about, the process that we are going to be taking. We are plugging in into conversations where, you know, men gather together, people gather together and just say, what are your views, perspectives, and fears around these things? And then, of course, we bring in hematologists, people who are in the know. They then help us demystify these things. So I'm just hoping that we'll have these conversations on an ongoing basis. Thank you very much.
I hope so, Lorato, and you've added to the conversation, and condolences to you, your family, and those who loved Luzu Kokoti, a renowned journalist in South Africa. So let me bring you back into the conversation briefly, Osken Sani. Stem cell donation being different to blood donation or the same thing, I don't know, help us. And then secondly, a question online says, what happens with the blood that's donated? Because this gentleman had been a blood donor for a long time, and then he found out that the blood service, says Swindler of Bell Pepper, the blood service was selling the blood to hospitals. Is that true?
Okay, so just to clarify that one, we get that a lot. Now, I like that we have the platform and the opportunity to discuss it. So as you would imagine, as a not-profit organization, we do not then get any subsidies from the government and such. So all the business that we conduct at the moment has to be funded in some sort of way. So when someone receives a transfusion, first and foremost, it should be covered by the government if you are in a state hospital, and secondly, by your medical aid if you're a private institution. So this is a prescribed minimum benefit, and you should then have your bill settled. If you are not able to do that, I think it is advisable for you to contact us, and then we are always able through our medical department to sort of figure out how we can assist you with that. So our number is 0800 119 031. So you shouldn't have to pay for any transfusions unless it is specialized blood, which is another topic all in itself.
And what do you know of stem cell donation? How is it different to blood donations?
So stem cells, I'm not quite sure on this topic. I don't want to lie to you, but I think Umakosi would be able to speak to this if she has a bit more information.
And I think that's fair. Sis Makosi, stem cell donation. And then secondly, there's a comment here that says, no, he won't donate blood, because receiving someone's blood or giving away your blood is like living with a togolosh in your body. What do you say to that?
Wow. I'm sorry, I'm taken aback by that comment. I've never heard that perspective before.
Okay. And you don't agree?
Absolutely do not agree.
Okay.
We are all collectively part of the same human race. Ultimately, we are all God's creation. And there is no way that receiving or giving a blood donation or a stem cell donation or an organ donation is like giving or receiving something like an entity.
Okay.
It's life-saving.
Let me do this. Let me say, stem cells opens up another world to us. If we can redo this conversation a few weeks from now, after we've processed the blood element, and let's get to know a little bit more on the stem cell element, which, from what I've been told, is the remaining living cells or organisms in your body through which even people like your grandparents come alive. Certainly that's what they say in fertility treatments. Kensani Mahlangu Makosi Nomabutu Abutile Orato, all of you, our power listeners, we've learned so much about the 4IR, about blood donations, about water outages in the country, about life as South Africans. It's always, always a joy. It's always an education. And to you, we say power. We say thank you.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.